And when you find someone that you believe in their why and what they're doing and their purpose, and you match that, I believe that you can really excel your coaching with your clients and vice versa.
This is Superfast Business with James Schramko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schramko here. Welcome back to our incredible series, which is, you know, really, it's quite exciting and revolutionary, certainly for a lot of people listening to this. It's the first exposure or the second exposure to this whole idea of DNA, this Optimum Strategy to Health and Fitness series with my good friend Johnny Deacon has been mind-blowing for me. Welcome back, Johnny.
Hi, James. We're nearly at the end of the marathon.
It's amazing. It's like a massive workout. It's been certainly a long series. If you just arrived at this episode, you need to go back and listen to episode one, which is where we just covered DNA and Johnny introduced why we might be interested in it, what it is. We did DNA 101, how you can get out of that one-size-fits-all scenario and go to a more personalized training program. And we even covered my own fitness report, which was eye-opening. Then we moved into podcast two, where we talked about the foods that I should and shouldn't eat and how my body processes everything from caffeine through to vitamins and toxins. And that was really interesting. And we also covered the psychology, how we actually approach our training. And then we're here right now in podcast number three of this series. And in this one, we're going to be talking about the three pillars: why discovery, leveraging pain, and the power of habit. So I'm going to hand over to you, Johnny, to take us home.
Thanks, James. And I'd really like to kick this off by asking the question, what makes people give up and go from the impossible to possible? And I believe it's centered around people really moving from shoulds into musts. Now, for me, musts are about creating things which allow us to be pulled towards our desired results. And in this case, with our health and fitness, these are actually getting up and running with three critical elements in and around these musts. Now, the first one of these is quite punchy. It's actually looking at discovering your purpose, your why for actually transforming. Now, most people will associate their whys with life events. Now, in the health and fitness realm, this is kind of popularized, and the most common ones are January's New Year's resolutions, summer holiday beach bodies, wedding days. I mean, the one I love to use the example here is the bride's diet. So almost all bride's diets are generally all successful. And the reason for that is because their why, their purpose is huge. But one of the things I remind people is that don't be fooled by these almost life events, which include the bride's diet, because often they'll demonstrate short-term responses to long-term desires. Now, the reason I say that is there's some research at Flinders University in Adelaide in Australia, where they found women who dieted before their wedding put on significantly more weight within 6 months of being hitched. And in a study of nearly 350 brides, it revealed that 6 months after their weddings, participants had gained on average 2.1 kilos. So every single participant gained weight after the event.
Now, hang on a minute. Isn't this a lot like a bodybuilder after a contest, after they've, you know, starved themselves and cut their body and started, you know, getting less moisture in their body and all this sort of stuff?
Like, yes.
Isn't it deadline driven?
And yes.
Isn't it to be expected that a hard yes. deadline that's going to have an overflow?
Yeah, it's such a good point. And I know it well, because when, after competing and using actually my information from my DNA results to build out my programs for my bodybuilding shows, you're right. There is a big, big prize almost. There's a big, big outcome to be able to achieve. The problem is, in my experience with myself even and clients, is the aftermath, the post coming out of that. And it's not to say that brides wanting to achieve their best when they want to look fantastic on their wedding day, that's not what I'm saying here in terms of good or bad. What I'm saying is most of my clients, when they come to see me, they want a long-term result with their health and fitness. They want it to last long time. And
well, I think, you know, a bride or a bodybuilder, they don't need the long-term result. They need a result by a certain time. So I think that might be an exception, right? It makes sense. They're going to invest a huge amount on photography. It's the most important day in their life. They've been dreaming of it, especially the brides, been dreaming of it since they were a kid, this princess fairy wedding. It's a huge psychological driver. But most people, and you know, most people after they're married, they get on with life. And unless you're a professional bodybuilder, where I imagine your body's going to be yo-yoing up and down as long as you compete. For normal people like me, who's just going about life, then I would say one of the filters from what I'm hearing you're saying is not to be deadline driven or sprint driven or fad driven or seasonally driven, but to be perpetually driven to have a sustainable program.
I only base this on what the market comes back to me in terms of feedback. And when I'm doing qualitative analysis with my clients, some of the biggest drivers for them are long-term health and fitness. You know, they want to be around in later life to be able to have experiences with such as grandchildren and be able to be doing things into their elderly life where they're capable and physically capable of doing things and feel optimized. If we're looking at the optimum strategy to health and fitness, where we're looking at longevity and having good quality across our life, then there are absolutely strategies which look at public declarations and deadlines, which we'll come on to. And that's very much in the realm of attaching pain, you know, leveraging pain in the sense of actually wanting to get those short bursts within that marathon of actually getting over certain criteria and certain target driven finish lines. But in relation to this, what I see that's a common problem is that people are so focused on the what and the hows rather than actually what their purposes about the longevity of the journey. And a lot of people will confuse why with a result. So a goal is a result, like we said about the bride's diet or jumping on a bodybuilding stage. But the why is actually what leads to that result. And I actually think about the path that most people follow to obtain a health and fitness objective. And often, if you draw a circle, it represents the arrow traveling from the outside in. You know, most people will start on the outer section of a circle and say, you know, what should I be doing if that outer line of a big fat circle is representing the what? And most questions that get asked within the health and fitness space are, you know, what do I do to get a toned and flatter stomach? How do I get six-pack abs? What exercises will I get, you know, to get a rounder bum? How do I get a beach body ready in 30 days or less? And often starting with why accepts that no matter what your aim, if it's the bride's, you know, your wedding day or looking at becoming a bodybuilder and jumping on stage, you should always work with an understanding of its purpose. And I'll give you an example of this, James. Most of the competitors which I competed with, their purpose and why was very much, from what I saw on show day, a significant standpoint. You know, it was really much about the challenge of an internal challenge with themselves. And that's fine. But it's the aftermath of that. And I always knew my purpose and why going into that was to create value, i.e. document that process and be able to afterwards give that entire process away to free to my community so that it could understand what and get a lean in on what that kind of life was. So that really helped my why, my purpose to drive that over the line. But it continued. I felt like I had a much easier path out coming out of my bodybuilding show where you're starting to eat more calories. You're actually starting to drink a lot more water again. Your mind starting to resume to normal. Whereas I think people that were very much built on just that event had a much harder time coming back into almost like the real world, as you rightly pointed out. So I think that that's the first real consideration for people in relation to really thinking about what is actually driving them. Is it coming up to the 1st of January 2017 and it's going to be another attempt at this, you know, another stab of, you know, 30 days right January, I'm going to really go for it this time? Or are you going to take a step back and actually think, what is driving me for this? What are my real purpose and whys behind it?
Yeah, I can totally relate to it. And I had someone ask me yesterday, they asked me, hey, listen, with Silver Circle training, you know, is the real benefit that I've got someone to be accountable to and to drive me? And I said, no, absolutely not. Like, if you don't know why you're there and if you don't want to do it yourself, then you've got to go and think about your reason why. You've got to understand why this is important to you. The last thing I want to do as a coach is push someone along. I don't know about you. When you're training someone, do you find that if a student wants to do well and they have a strong reason, that your job's 10 times easier?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is some science around this in terms of the way that people absorb information. I'm sure that you and your listeners are aware of this from other experts. I'm a huge fan of Simon Sinek in relation to his Start With Why. I know that I shared my why with you early on for when we first started connecting. And he popularized this with his golden circle. And he talks about the outer part of your brain, the neocortex, really deals well with rationale and analytical thought and language. But that really deals with kind of like the what part of the brain. But you go one layer into your brain, and the next layer into that is the limbic brain. It's very primal. And it really is the responsibility for all driving all human behavior and decision making. And it really has no capacity for language. So this is the why part of the brain. So in other words, when you communicate from the outside in, when we talked about that big circle, if that represents our brain on the outside layer, what should I be doing in relation to my health and fitness, all these what's and how's, people can actually understand huge amounts of data, nutritional facts, training theory, sleep advice, but it just doesn't drive behavior. So this is fundamentally rooted in biology rather than kind of looking at this psychological element. And being a biological fact and actually starting with why means that if you understand your why and you're true to it, it means that the bumps down the road are going to be less of a challenge for you, because you're really rooted in what is my purpose for doing this. And you're absolutely right. Silver Circle is a great example of that. I often believe that people are attracted to those that believe what they believe. And I certainly believe what you're doing within your community. And I think you are to some extent with what I'm doing with mine. And when you find someone that you believe in their why and what they're doing and their purpose, and you match that, I believe that you can really excel your coaching with your clients and vice versa.
Well, that's it. I do believe in what you're doing, Johnny. I walked past that gym for 3 years and didn't feel compelled to join. And the reason why, I knew that if I joined, it'd be an uphill battle. I'd be pushing myself into an area like I don't want to be. I was focused on surfing. I didn't feel motivated for it. And I wasn't going to make it the trainer's responsibility to push me, because I'm going to be fighting him at every turn. I'll be trying, resenting lifting the weights. And I'm so strong-minded now that I need to want to do it. If I want to do it and I'm excited to do it, then I can do it. Even with Ted, I can do it, because I'll find my own research and I'll motivate myself to go down there and I'll lift the weights without anyone telling me to do it. And someone asked me yesterday, do you listen to music when you're at the gym or whatever? I said, I don't need to. I can just go down there and be responsible for myself. I could stare at a spot on the wall and lose myself into another planet while I'm using a rowing machine and emerge back 5 minutes later as if nothing happened. So I know the brain is really, really important part of this. Let's go to the next point about leveraging pain thresholds, because I think it's probably closely related.
Yeah, pain thresholds from a goal striving perspective varies from person to person. And we're not obviously talking about pain from something like the rowing machine, which you mentioned, or bicep curls. But we actually mean when we're talking about leveraging pain from a coaching perspective within my business and my clients is actually being highly strategic. And you mentioned this before at the start of this episode. The most profound examples of this are public declarations and deadlines. And really what I found in my experience is that this really forces people to take action. And some of the best actually I find with this, James, I'm not sure if you find this with your clients in your business, is 90-day increments. I find that anything more than that, then sometimes people can lose focus. I know you're huge on building out your tracks and understanding where your outcome is. And I do the same with my clients. But really just focusing on those 90-day increments can help. Now, there is a thing here which we spoke about from Colby in the last episode, that deadlines really do motivate and drive behavior within dominant quick starts. So it's always worth understanding one's Colby before just blanketly saying yes to all deadlines work for some people, because we know that inherently that's not the truth. For people that resist in Quickstarter and they're kind of lows in 3s, 2s, and 1s, if you're giving them very, very forceful deadlines to be able to achieve certain markers, then they might struggle with that and that actually might put them off. So there's very subtle differences that you can make with each individual client to try and really drive and really fully understand them. One of the other issues here is monetary penalties and actually investment. You know, should a person skip the gym or not log a food journal? Sometimes this could be deemed as very extreme, possibly, but social promises of obtaining results to friends and family or having financial penalties can sometimes for certain people bring unbelievable leverage when beginning a fitness program. I often believe that they act as a bridge before the magics of kind of habits replaces it, which I know that's something we're going to come on to next. And it can often be very, very powerful as long as this is managed and accountable to someone else. Some of the best examples of this are using a coach or a mentor. When it's structured correctly to the right individual, I'm sure you've heard this expression before, it's like adding gasoline to a fire that's already started. You know, what is interesting about this, James, within sport at the highest level, coaches, are most of them are not as proficient or skilled as their actual athletes that are competing. But at its core, you know, simply being accountable to another person and a coach's ability to, you know, see distinctions when that person's not actually doing the exercises or playing the sport, you know, that can be the difference between success and failure.
I've got some strong views on this one. Firstly, definitely public declarations do not work for everyone. There's some strong research, especially Derek Silvers brings this to our attention, that they could cause you to fail.
Yes.
Because you start to release the feeling as if you've done it. Same as when people buy a course, and because they've spent the money and they're now attached to the idea that they have this course, they release themselves from the burden of actually going through it.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot of shrink wrap wear out there. The other things that I think are interesting, the idea of carrot and stick, I direct listeners to go and watch the Dan Pink TED Talk, that motivating people with penalties and that type does not get people to move forward. In fact, I've found for a lot of high performers, it's a real turnoff. I think it can work well with low performers. Very low performers or under average people can often be lifted up to average with a simple incentive system. But the more intelligent someone gets or the more high performance they get, they're going to be too savvy for that. There'll be some other intrinsic motivator. It might be that they've got something to prove. They want to show up their parents, or they're competitive with other people in their peer group. It's the more it can come from within, the better, I think. Yeah, so I really dislike public declarations of goals. I'm more of the camp, show me, don't tell me.
Yes.
And that's because I'm more self-motivated than other people.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I mean, fundamentally, what we're really looking at here is looking at the person as an individual and really trying to find, you know, how can that person emotionally connect with their outcome? You know, what is it that's critical to them about really getting over the line with this objective, and fundamentally coaching someone so that, you know, they can be on standing on their own two feet. You know, you're with them whilst the stabilizers are on, and you can start to unscrew those and then eventually allow them to go off and come back to you and make sure that they're still accountable but from a little bit further away. And I really do agree with you on those points. I really do think it comes down.
Well, that's like as a coach, you can tell I'm really passionate about this one, because I've spent years coaching people, you know, and it's not in fitness, thankfully, but with business, I see myself more as a key holder. And when students come along with their padlocks and they say, I want to be free, I want to unlock myself, I want to get going, I don't know how to, I don't know all the answers, I think they're getting the knowledge. I'm like, well, here, use this key on that padlock, and they try it and they go, wow, you know, I'm unbound now, I'm ready to unleash. So it's about removing the restrictors. I'm helping people take logs off the track, but I'm not forcing them to shovel the coal. I like someone who's ready to motivate their own engine and who just wants help to navigate and pick the right path. So I think as a coach, a good coach is going to be an ideas person who can clearly see what the student sometimes can't see. They can fill in the area of the Johari window, which is what the coach can see but the student can't. And I think they'll especially focus on mindset, whatever it is, whether it's fitness or business. I think that mindset is a big percentage of the deal. And the fact that someone seeks out a coach is a great starting point. But if they're seeking them out because they want someone to kick their butt, then they need to go and find a mirror and do some work on themselves first before they make it the coach's problem, or they're trying to make the coach accountable for their lack of performance. And I don't cop that at all.
Yes, I would agree with that. And it comes back to some of the experiences I've had with even people once they've done their genetics test and they've had a huge amount of information and they still don't take action. And this is what really has allowed me to...
Comes down to one word, responsibility.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I'm really pleased that we've got a platform to be able to express that, because you're absolutely right. People do need to take responsibility for this.
Even if I got a coach and I didn't get the results I wanted, it'd be my fault for not choosing the right coach. I'll still take responsibility for my outcome. Yes. But that is rare in this, era of entitlement and everything comes easy and everyone's a winner and all that crap.
Totally. And I know that Dan Sullivan's big on actually, taking responsibility for one's own happiness. That's not anyone else's responsibility, and actually moving forward with their lives. And it's a really, really good point. And I think that we can only get the strategy as finely tuned and bespoke as possible to people, but actually they need to take the first step with that, without a doubt.
So what we've been talking about here is creating a lifetime outlook. It's a way that you can, like in business, I'm always looking for a sustainable routine, a sustainable model.
Yes.
That's what, but most people, they come unstuck because they're looking at spiky things or risky things or single source dependent or sprint type things that, and it was never going to last. When it blows up, you think, well, how did you even think that would last? Because it's not sustainable. So I like the word sustainable. I think if it's in terms of an eating and an exercise program, if it's sustainable, then that's the sort of thing that you would recommend as well.
Totally. And we're going to come on to how I feel that there's some strategies and some bonuses that we can give to your listeners around that, which moves, one of which is moving people away from this ideology of structured, fixed dieting to get these quick-term results, i.e. the bride's diet or the bodybuilding diet for these 12-week periods. In actual fact, we just want to be way more strategic than that. We want to look at way a much more sustained long period of time of actually optimizing your health and giving yourself that time to do that. If you do need longer to be able to achieve these goals, then that's absolutely fine. But the way that we can help you with this is considering this next factor, so to speak, is understanding, which I know you know a lot about, is understanding and implementing the science of habits in relation to your health and fitness.
If you are a bride or you are a bodybuilder going to a competition or what have you, then that's cool. Just understand that there'll be some work to do afterwards unless you want to be a statistic.
That's a really good point, and that's a very elegant way to be able to say that. I mean, it's absolutely what we're looking at here is not a negative towards those, because I've actually done one of those. And
I can also relate to this from a business perspective. Like a lot of listeners of this show have a job or are in the transition of switching from a full-time job to their own gig. Or they've got their own gig, but they're still in that phase where they're burning the midnight oil. I've done it. I bet you do it. But that's when you're working really hard, really long hours. You hear words like grinding and hustling. My point is, as quickly as you can move to the sustainable, lifestyle design, like I have now, and just to give perspective, I've been at this for a decade with the online stuff and a couple of decades before the online stuff. So everything I've learned, experienced, and has got me to this point now. It doesn't happen in the first week or the first month. So if you're like, this is the great thing about this particular series. I'm in beginner's mind with this. I'm curious. I'm applying all my principles and philosophies that I've used outside of this health and fitness thing to see, to recalibrate and get up to speed, which is what you've been so helpful with, Johnny. But I'm going to make sure that I'm going to put in a sustainable program. And I'm not just talking that. I've been doing that for the last few weeks and even, probably for the last year since I've been getting help from my friends and supporters who I've mentioned liberally in this series, specifically Angelo, Tamas, and the chaperons, Anita and Andre. Very helpful people guiding me. But I'm a work in progress, and people around me notice the change. And that's my hope, that someone listening to this will have this episode as an inspiration, but not just to spark a one-time change. This is think about how this could apply for the rest of your existence. So, you know, having nice first steps that are easy, that you, you know, access good information and so forth. So take us through the various parts that we would have to go through to get this long-lasting lifestyle change.
Yeah, it's a really good point you've made there. And I'd just like to add that when you start viewing this as an investment in yourself, it changes the game, because when you make an investment, you're really looking at appreciation over time. You're appreciating yourself first and foremost, but appreciation is, you know, within the business world, that compounds over a series of months and years. And if you start putting in this groundwork now and you look for that long-term sustained vision, then, you know, like your businesses, as they grow, you'll wake up one day and realize, you know, looking back over your shoulder, how far you've come with this. And the next phase of this really looks at understanding and implementing the science of habits in relation to your health and fitness. And just with some statistics here, around 40% of what we do is linked to habits. I know that number might change depending on the study and the research, but I think it's safe to say that habits are an important part of people's lives. And they emerge because the brain's constantly looking for ways to save energy. And one of the ways that it does this is it creates something called a habit loop. And within this habit loop, the first thing is there's this cue. You know, it's a trigger that tells your brain to go into a habit or use, where there's a routine followed and then finally by a reward. So there's an emotional connection. So when we look at this cue, routine, and reward, over time, this loop becomes more and more automatic. And this is something really powerful and leveraged if we can tap into it properly from a health and fitness perspective. You know, the cue and the reward become intertwined, and there's a real anticipation and craving around certain foods, around potentially getting your bag ready and going to the gym, even going out for a surf. There will be elements of cues within that before that routine and that reward start to emerge. Now, unless you deliberately fight habits from the negative point of view, then you're gonna start to really struggle, because being in an automatic mode, sometimes it's very difficult to pick up where these cues are starting and happening in relation to bad habits. And once someone creates a new pattern, studies have demonstrated that going for a jog or ignoring the donuts becomes automatic as new habits start to establish. So a great example of this is in terms of negative habits that can be in people's lives and how they establish is, you know, like parents potentially, I'm not a parent, but parents potentially, you know, driving past McDonald's with their children and they decide to stop once. And when the kids are starving and you're driving home and it's been a long day, you know, sometimes you want to stop in and be able to get some inexpensive food. You know, it's very quick and easy and convenient. And because these meals are processed, you know, and it's only once, it can't be that bad. But the problem is, studies indicate that families usually don't intend to eat fast food on a regular basis. The same with takeaways, if that starts to happen every so often throughout the month. And what happens is that once a month patterns slowly become once a week and then twice a week. And as these cues and rewards create habits, it's not long before the kids are consuming those unhealthy amounts of hamburgers and fries on a regular basis. And there's a number of cues and rewards that most customers within fast food joints, just use this as an example, they don't actually know that they're being influenced by. So every McDonald's looks the same. The employees say the same things. Everything's consistent through the food. And it starts to trigger these cues in terms of these eating routines. And they're smart because, you know, the fries are designed to disintegrate the moment they touch your tongue so that you get that hit of grease and salt as fast as possible. So they're really pushing on your pleasure center to be able to light up areas of your brain to lock in that pattern and create that loop. And I only use that as a very extreme example, because that's at the end of some of the battles that we're having within the health and fitness space. But I'm almost certain that there's representations of this within the business world as well, James.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, everything that we've talked about so far in this entire series has a business equivalent. So that's what makes it so much fun.
And one of the solutions to this in terms of creating new habits, which I suspect most people would want to do in relation to their health and fitness, is starting to really think about how to create new habits and put a cue and a routine and a reward in place, which will cultivate and drive a new quality routine. Now, a cue and a reward on their own in terms of changing them aren't enough to create a habit that will last. It's only when the brain starts to expect the reward that the craving for endorphins or a sense of accomplishment will start to become automatic, and they'll be laced up as much as when you go for, you know, things like jogs or go past the gym. And cues, in addition to triggering that routine, can vary from person to person. One of the kind of standard examples within this space to give listeners a deeper understanding of this is if you consider toothpaste. You know, when Claude Hopkins was going about making it popular to brush your teeth, he wasn't actually selling the brushing of one's teeth. He was actually selling the sensation. And once people started to crave that cool tingling, and once they equated it to cleanliness, it's the same as when, you know, tests were done with people pulling out their washing, and the first thing they're doing is going to smell it rather than kind of, you know, feeling and holding it up to the light to see if it was clean. People were using their senses there. That was another cue for them to tell them that this was working and this is the right thing to do. So, you know, while everyone brushes their teeth, fewer than 10% of Americans actually apply sun cream every day. I'm not sure what the statistics are in Australia, but there's no real craving for sunscreen on a daily habit in relation to that. And what drives habits is about figuring out what sparks that cue. Now, for exercise, this is actually really easy, and momentum can be established pretty quickly with this, with the correct strategies and structure. So natural endorphins create cravings. And I guess that's similar to surfing. You know, a cue will be touching the board perhaps, or having a coffee and seeing the ocean when you wake up. And mine's actually in relation to exercises after I finished all of my morning gratitude from 5 a.m. and done my emails and got my day set up. My bag's packed by the door and I'm cued and ready to go, and that becomes automatic. So the framework for this normally relates to a four-step process, because cues can normally fit into five categories: location, time, emotional state, other people, and then immediately preceding actions. So something where something changes in your day, but it happens on a routine basis. And the problem is that people aren't normally aware to these cues, but they're already kind of in the cycle of doing the routine in relation to getting some form of reward. So the framework for this is firstly identifying the routine, experimenting with rewards and isolating the cue, and then having a strategy to actually go about changing these habits. And interestingly enough, one of the things that I use as an example with my clients, it sounds counterintuitive, but after a client who's new with me within the first 30 days of training together, I'll actually allow them to have a piece of their favorite chocolate, or, you know, a handful of their favorite sweets, because similar to Pavlov dogs, I'm actually trying to get them associated with mimicking a reward that is already established for them, but we're actually now changing out the routine that they do, which might normally be sitting in front of the TV with a sugary tooth after a meal, or watching Netflix, and actually replacing that reward with that routine with going to the gym, and then actually using the same reward, that same endorphin release, by associating with chocolate or sweets. So although that sounds quite counterintuitive, we're actually trying to make the new routine a much better one, higher quality, and actually one that's pulling people towards their health and fitness objectives.
Totally makes sense. You can do it with music as well. You can set anchors. I love all this Ericksonian hypnosis stuff, and I've read a lot of books about habit and activators and behaviors and consequences. That was actually the origin of the naming of Think, Act, Get.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah, how you think determines the way you act, which results in what you get. Even putting on your sneakers, you know, having special shoes just for the gym, which you're excited about putting those particular shoes on. They transport you. They're special ones. With surfers, they have magic boards. They ride a board that they think goes well, and they save it for a big event, and then they ride that one when they want to perform well. For me, just hanging a board on the wall and looking at it is quite a compelling thing. It's a good anchor. I'm like, yeah, I want to take it off the wall and ride it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, from this health and fitness perspective, what we're really looking to do is try and trick the brain, you know, into really giving into that intrinsic reward eventually, you know. So they're getting that piece of chocolate initially, but what we find is after people are up and running with a routine, and, you know, they finish their session, actually the last thing that they want is their sweets and chocolate, because that really doesn't associate with a new identity that's starting to form. You know, someone that gets up at 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. now to go to the gym, you know, do they really not have the willpower to be able to not have that piece of chocolate or sweet after the training session? You know, one of the golden rules I find within habit change, and I know you'll be a real grandfather of this, is a community. Now, one of the things that I like to use as an example with this is Alcoholics Anonymous, AA, you know, the 12 Apostles steps that they forged in terms of relation to actually taking out certain routines, but people getting the same reward. And often, you know, one of the biggest things for Alcoholics Anonymous is when people, clients are starting out with this, they actually start to figure out what is it that actually people are doing in relation to drinking. Because most people that have been researched in this area, actually, it's not actually the drink that's driving them. It's actually the reward of being able to release, you know, have an emotional release, be able to be, have relaxation, companionship, you know, an offer of escape, and be able to be around people, which is similarly replicated when people, you know, go for cocktails after work or go for pints after work. They're in that environment, and that's what predominantly people are actually craving as the reward. It's just that the routine at the moment isn't the one that's being effective in relation to their health and fitness. And one of the biggest single disadvantages that I see from almost like a one-to-one personal training experience is that sense of long-term community. Because I think one of the things that communities do within these power habit loops is they really forge and build an established belief. You know, I know that from coming into your community, that, you know, when you start to see case studies and, you know, SFB Live, you're looking at individuals that have sat out in the audience and then are up on stage and actually speaking, you know, these triggers within these habit loops can have deep psychological effects on people and actually start to drive this routine in another direction, because they're seeing confidence with other people, they're seeing community, and there is that belief that they can actually do that. And this has been proven time and time again with the community aspect across all hosts of communities, not just within the health and fitness space. A really good example is this is CrossFit, in terms of the community that they've built in creating quality habit loops and accountability. But also, as we said before, in things like your community and Alcoholics Anonymous, that, you know, there's some really good examples of how important this is in terms of habit changes.
Well, it's really important in my field, because being an entrepreneur and often not going into an office, it can be a lonely sport. I'm sitting here right now at Manly overlooking the ocean. There's no one else here. It's just me and you, and you're in another country. I mean, the technology available is phenomenal. But for that reason, I've set up hybrid situations for my coaching programs, both Silver Circle and Superfast Business. They're a hybrid of group and personal. And as amazing as it sounds, I've now got one-to-one coaching inside our group of Superfast Business membership. And people, like, they can't believe that I've done that. They can't understand how I'm able to do it. But it's a great feature. They still have the community there to draw on and get the extra Rolodex working for them, and people to buy from, people to sell to, people to celebrate companionship with at events. And then in Silver Circle, exact same thing. It's a group, but it's got individual tracks where people can have private one-to-one discussions. So I think you're absolutely right. People you hang around with is who you become like. And so you have to decide where you want to put your attention. Again, taking responsibility for what do you want, what are you prepared to do to get there, but your peer group will be a good indicator as to where you might end up.
For sure. And one of the things I would say on this is the extension of this is that there are some fundamental keystone habits within these loops. And keystone represents, you know, that arch doorway that, you know, is made out of stone, and at the very top there's a keystone that actually holds the whole bridge of that arch together. Now, if you remove that, you'll start to feel that, start to see the other areas of your life. This will start to transcend into other areas of your life, and exercise is such a powerful one for that. You know, since the dawn of time, people being able to get fit and healthy, there will be absolutely other areas that this will bleed into their lives. And this is one thing that I really like to focus on with clients, because if I can really get them energized and established with this habit and in relation to this keystone habit of getting good quality habits and routines in relation to the going to the gym and being structured and actually having a sense of, yes, I can do this. This is actually building momentum. It really does start to bleed into other areas of life. And that's not, you know, based on my opinion. That's based on, you know, experience of the last 5 years of dealing with clients in relation to their performance, not just in their own businesses, but those that are even employed in terms of working their way up through the working structures, but transcending into all aspects of their life. You know, one of the things that really draws my attention to this, which I know that you know a lot about, is the relationship between habits and willpower. You know, willpower really for me is one of the single most important keystone habits for any individual. You know, like a muscle, I believe that it needs to be trained, and you have a lot more of it at certain times of the day. Just out of my experience of working with clients, you know, getting them up into routines for the first thing that they're doing in the morning of going and doing some form of exercise can have huge knock-on keystone habit effects in relation to the rest of their day and how they structure that. And, you know, it does take time. And if you're in the long game, some of the benefits to this can be absolutely fantastic. You know, the value of exercise and physical benefits within the entrepreneurial space can be incredible. I know we spoke before at the very start of this series about some of your community members asking, you know, what would be the point of me doing this? Remember, it's not solely focused on just what can DNA do for you. The bigger picture here is that it's an investment in your time and money to be able to better your quality of life and actually have an impact on your businesses or your working environment. I know we picked up on some points before where, you know, exercise can elevate your mood, you know, in terms of implications within your performance of your businesses. You know, if you're trying to build good quality relationships, interpersonal connections, foster collaborations, both online and offline, I would suspect that having improved, you know, concentration, being able to have prolonged mental stamina, enhanced creativity and lower levels of stress, these are all things that are going to be able to help people move away from factors of feeling irritable or overwhelmed. And I really do feel that once you start to implement that keystone habit of exercise and building a better you from a health and fitness perspective, it can only add value to your business and where you're wanting to go with that area of your life too.
Where does that leave us in terms of this series and where we're at and how we're going to end this?
So we're pretty much there now. And in terms of finishing up, there are one or two points that I would suggest that your listeners actually think about if they want to take the next steps with this and some solutions. We've talked briefly about using the example of Ted, you know, the personal trainer, which we've used at your gym. One of the things I would say is if you're looking at picking up a coach or a trainer, you know, statistically what we found from our research is that, you know, 60% of people will begin an exercise program at some point in their life. 80% will quit within 3 months and 80% of gym memberships actually never get used. But actually 85% of those that have a personal trainer or coach actually maintain their program, even if the trainer is rubbish. You know, so it's safe to say that having that accountability factor can yield better results with a coach. There are some signs that listeners would need to be wary of. Some are very obvious and some not so much. If you're looking to pick up a coach, first and foremost, do they have the appearance that you'd want to aspire to? You know, I know that this is something that you had some experience with Ted, you know, in terms of the way that his appearance was. That's not to say that a coach isn't validity there, that they don't have excellent knowledge. But most clients that I deal with initially when they're first starting with, they want to have some trust and be able to see that someone actually walks their talk and can actually have the ability to do this. You know, have they got the actual blueprint that they've done it themselves? And really, that's the first point of call with this if you're looking to pick up a coach. There are some other factors. You need to make sure that that individual is properly qualified. You know, you need to be able to check those credentials. We've spoken briefly about, you know, the representation within the health and fitness space for personal trainers, that the bodies that they're accountable to are not very strict. So you need to make sure that when you're asking them that they really do know their stuff and that they are actually the right person to help you. You know, make sure that they get to know you well enough. You know, make sure they identify with you, the factors that we've spoken about so far within this series, and they actually understand your baseline measurements, They're really keen on understanding your objectives, looking at what your lifestyle habits are currently to start being able to build out this strategy alongside things like your DNA and your Colby. And if you actually decide to take a session like you did, James, that's a really good thing to do. You know, one of the things that you would want to check is that they're actually focused on you the whole time you're in the gym. You know, they're not looking around at other people. They're not on their smartphones, which is one of the huge things that I used to see when clients were getting trained by other trainers, you know, and, you know, looking at themselves in the mirror and making sure that when you're in the gym and you're on your own and you're looking at possible trainers, have a look and see what they're doing with other clients. You know, are they doing the same exercises for every single client that comes in? You normally see some overlay between personal trainers that come in and they'll just be doing on repeat, you know, eight sessions back to back, and they'll just be doing the same exercises with the same people, and there's no creativity or bespokeness there. It really allows you to be able to start to give some cues, because some people coming into this environment really are none the wiser, you know, and that's absolutely fine because it's brand new, but we really want to give them some foundation to be able to really have some idea of what to look for.
Yeah, nice. So, and also I've had the occasional one where the person who I'm having do some work was this chiropractor once, and they start to turn it into a reverse session where I come in and then I end up training them for an hour on business while they're doing whatever they do to me. And that can get tiring after a while, because sometimes you just want a time off as a coach.
Absolutely. Yes, without a doubt. And it's important to be able to do that with your clients and be able to give them the respect for that. And I think as we draw this series to a close and we look at some solutions for clients, there are some other things that I get asked a lot in terms of relation to actually this quote unquote dieting. You know, one of the biggest factors with people is in and around looking at their nutrition. And hopefully by now we realize that there's some very deep quality pieces of information we can find out about individuals in relation to doing their DNA test. One of the things I would really stress upon listeners is whatever you decide, really do think about the options of going towards a flexible approach rather than a structured approach. You know, statistics indicate that 81% of people will quit a structured diet, quote unquote, after 14 days just because it's so restrictive. So think things like goals like birthdays and dates and weddings. You know, eating out can even be an issue. So I would really think closely about the next phase of what you're trying to get in to do with your strategies. Really think about a flexible approach to your nutrition. And what that means is starting to get educated on really useful tools, like what one that comes to mind here is MyFitnessPal. You know, I use that with clients daily. We use that within my partner and I use that on a daily basis to be able to structure all of our foods. And it's incredibly powerful when you throw into the mixture DNA results across those columns of protein, carbs, and fats, and start to educate yourself on how to take those food groups, work out your macro numbers, and actually start logging that and getting that data in about yourself that you can start to make informed choices about. It will really move you out of this dark ages of a template structured approach and allow you to have that flexibility for days when, you know, you want to be able to go out with friends and add one or two meals that are conventionally not on the plan. You know, it is absolutely balanced. So what we're trying to do here is really leverage your genes, really leverage your psychology, and actually move you into a realm where you can start to be educated on this and take control of it. So the solutions to these, to really wrap this up, I would absolutely obtain a genetics test. After the work that we've done with you on this show, I would hope that that's come across to listeners. We've really looked and deep dived across the nutrition side, which looks at your response to carbohydrates and fats. We've also covered areas of detoxification and omega-3 requirements, all the way through to alcohol and caffeine and salt sensitivities. Finally, uncovering that, you know, we have some issues there with celiac predisposition for you in relation to gluten. These are all things that I would really struggle to think that anyone would have a tough time finding out without doing and obtaining a genetics test. And we also learned that in terms of the fitness side, there's some really key markers in relation to this with very profound research to back up how working to your genetics, you're going to be looking at getting close to 3 times the results from a fitness perspective across those power and endurance profiles, let alone integrating, you know, VO2 max responses, recovery and injury risks. And getting a quality test is important. And I would highly recommend that you take the time to be able to choose the right one with that. If your listeners have already leveraged Colby, that's a fantastic thing. For those people that haven't, again, I would strongly recommend taking that 36 question assessment and being able to put yourself in a position where a coach that understands that can help you integrate that into your fitness strategies. And really think about what qualities are you looking within a trainer. We looked at those kind of signs that you'll know that a trainer isn't the right one, and try and find something where you can bring that all together into a very highly strategic plan. And in summary, James, thank you for the platform to be able to deliver this message, because I think that people absolutely deserve it to be able to progress with their health and fitness strategies.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming on the show. And, you know, there we go. We've delivered three episodes of varying lengths. The first one was the introduction into DNA. The second one was going into, well, we started in the fitness report, and then we went into the diet report with episode two and psychology. And episode three, we've been really talking about habits and what to look for when you're getting a tailored solution. Johnny, your website, we really have to mention that. So where can we go and find out about you?
Yeah, you can find out more about what we're doing with clients at mydnacoach.com. And we also have a podcast, which is by the same name via iTunes, which is My DNA Coach.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Johnny. And I appreciate all the information you supported me with. And I look forward to continuing with it in a sustainable way. And we'll see where we go.
Thanks, James. I'm really looking forward to the next steps with it.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.